So we're live again.
We're double live now.
It's
all going on.
It's all going on right now. Okay, so welcome to episode nine of Two John Science Fiction Podcast. This is surreal, man. Like, we're still here.
I can't believe it. Yeah,
we're out here in the Virginia studios.
Yes.
And it's 97 degrees outside.
It is pretty warm. I like it. I mean,
it's like hard sun, like post. It's like apocalyptic.
Yeah, it's funny because every time that I'm in a specific type of weather, I tell myself I like this weather, and then I have to say, "You say that when it's super cold, and when it's super hot, and when it's in between." And I'll tell you what, the only kind of weather I don't like drizzly.
Yes.
I'm like, if you're going to rain,
just
rain,
just rain, right?
And I don't mind cloudy, like when it looks like it's getting ready to drizzle. But that little thing where it's like not quite, oh, we know it's getting ready to happen too, you know?
Oh, right. So I'm like. Because I always forget to turn
right.
on the volume. So,
but no, I don't like drizzle. But I do like this weather, and you know, every time I see it, it's like, oh, I kind of, you know, the thing is, I know this is dangerous to people, and I probably shouldn't be wishing that this happened. But I kind of like for it to at least for a couple of days just kick up past 100, really high, so that everyone's freaking out. Because it's unreal to be in a world. You walk outside, and you're like, wow. The planet is actually like this right now.
Yes,
in this
it's super hot.
And it's not, you know, it's not like Death Valley where it's supposed to be like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of, I mean, there's a little sci-fi in there.
There's actually a show that I watched, like, two episodes, Hard Sun, which, by the way, we're not reviewing it, but it's so far out of the show. I want to like Jim Sturgis. I think that's his name. He just keeps choosing these roles that I don't like. So.
Maybe he has a bad agent.
Clearly has a bad agent. So. Give us a recap of what you're talking about. You're talking about Scenolithic. So
yeah, I was saying that the reason that the podcast is no longer a Fresh Pulp magazine in association with Scenolithic is that I discontinued Scenolithic because it was basically a place I was trying to get together a showcase of different writers and artists, and for various reasons that I don't want to go into, they couldn't stay, and so they couldn't. Stick with the thing, and they moved on to different things. Various other things happened, so I decided to switch it over to my own personal website, which is j.nelsonleaf.com.
Okay,
so that's why the beginning of it changed.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So the lead in basically has changed because we are.
And I like the
sponsorship has changed a lot.
Right. The sponsorship, the focus of the sponsorship. I was still doing it through Scenolithic to begin with, but I
and
decided.
Go ahead.
I also like my website's graphic better than the Scenolithic. I mean, I like the Scenolithic graphic, but I like the image
cool.
of the giant fire lion eating the earth.
So we had some corrections too, right?
Yes, I did have some corrections, and I'll go through them again for the people who's just...
Well, actually, before you get into that, because you had some, you were talking about your website, just to sort of clarify what's going on with the Fresh Pulp website, we're really sorry about some of the streaming from last month. So we had the podcast episode 9 audio only, episode 8 audio only podcast actually is going up this weekend because we had some technical issues with the site. There was some crashing going on. We figured out that the podcasting software that we were using to syndicate the podcast was causing a conflict. And actually my piece of fiction, which was supposed to be based upon the Cry 4 protein,
right,
which was only up for like a day. It's going back up also this week.
So you can check that out.
Yes, you can check that out. So what do we have next? Corrections.
My corrections. And if you watch the episodes on YouTube, the final edited versions, I put the... And I'm going to start doing this so the people know immediately that we caught ourselves in. This time I caught myself in several mistakes. But, for example, I had said that The Expanse had 2 seasons, so it was easy to binge. It's actually got 3 seasons on Sci-Fi, and its 4th season will be on Amazon Prime. It just had the season 3 finale, which was fantastic.
Yes.
If you haven't seen it, you've got to watch this. It's an amazing Amazing series.
We're going to talk about that a little bit.
We can talk about it a little bit more later.
Okay.
When we were talking about exoplanets, we were talking about things that were weird in the solar system, and I said that I just sort of mentioned Venus's axis or something like that.
Right.
And it's not its axis. It's Venus's rotation is not a typical speed. It's Uranus that has the eccentric axis. Uranus's axis is actually at almost a 90 degree angle to the plane of the solar system. Or it's aligned with the plane of the solar system. And the last correction, which I absolutely, this is one of those things that nobody's going to care about. But when I was watching it, I said, I got to check whether that's true or not. Something about that's not true. And when we were talking about dragonflies and their targeting and all of the neurological stuff that went on between their eyes and their wings, I said that they've been around since the Cambrian.
Right.
Wrong. Carboniferous. I got mixed up because they both start with the letter C.
Interesting.
And the Cambrian was way before that. And the moment every time I thought, they weren't part of the Cambrian explosion. So I looked it up and I was totally wrong. The Carboniferous period, which makes sense. That's when all the fern swamps and stuff.
Right.
Were around.
Okay.
Thus carbon. I should have known that. I grew up in West Virginia. If you don't know where the Carboniferous is, it's like the whole state basically relies on that period in prehistory.
For their sustenance.
So, that was my corrections. That was my correction sections.
Awesome. Okay.
And now we have...
What do we have?
Well, we have a loot crate. Now that we're on Facebook, we can actually talk about the
loot crate. Let's talk about the loot crate.
Yeah.
You know, I there's something about giving away stuff.
Yeah, there is.
I like giving away stuff.
Especially when you give away stuff that
you want for yourself.
You want for yourself or that you already have. Because this week we're also giving away something that we already have.
Okay.
Because one of the things is this particular... Now, we have a dual loot crate. We're giving two people...
We are.
Let's start with the books then. We're giving two people copies of books that we are going to review in the second hour. Which they are the Murderbot series by Martha Wells, and it's two novellas in this series so far, and both of the people who win the loot crate by commenting and sharing and liking the Facebook feed.
Yes, the Facebook feed.
Will get these, and one of those people.
And we're, by the way, small thing. If you like, we don't require you to like both,
right.
Share both, and comment on both, but. Either will do.
Right. Okay. And the other, one of the two will get this little dandy here, which is a paperweight. I don't know whether you can see this or not, but it has a planet inside of it. Now that really looks nice on the Instagram feed. Yeah, that's nice. Anyway, it's a little planet with a ring, keeping with the outer space theme of the Murderbot.
Okay.
The Murderbot giveaway. And so,
We will be reviewing the Murderbot, the first two books in the Murderbot series
in the second hour. Right. And that's why we wanted to make it sort of theme. We're trying to do themes, and we've done themes.
Yes.
Actually, I'm
keeping it thematic.
Pushing the themes. I like doing themes. You know, we've done that thing.
Fantastic. Okay. So, I feel like we're getting short on movies, man. I feel like we're getting short on material and content.
I tell you what, I mean, it's like, isn't summer supposed to be? I mean, there are things that we could have done Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom. We could have done that.
We could have.
We could have, we could do every third superhero movie that comes out.
Yeah.
But I like the fact that this time we picked a movie that was kind of under the radar. And,
well, Upgrade was really under the radar. That was like a South by Southwest like pick.
Right.
So it's becoming a trend.
That's true.
It's becoming a trend.
Yeah.
So, which I like. I like supporting small artists.
So this time we decided on a movie that had already kind of been beaten up and thrown in the corner by a lot of critics. And,
it really was.
It's Hotel Artemis.
Yeah. And it's been, by the way, beaten up and thrown in the corner for what I feel like are the wrong reasons.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. And I didn't know that when I went into it. I actually went in expecting something terrible, something deserving.
Yes.
It's a Rotten Tomatoes rating of 57 and 33 from the fans.
Yeah, the fans panned it.
Well, see, that goes into my theory, and I'll go into my theory about what I think happened later, about why the fans were so much harder on it than the critics were.
Well, let's do a rundown of the criteria. What are we doing? What criteria we decided on for this movie,
acting, which is, you know, of course you have to do acting. This movie has an ensemble cast.
Yes.
Of people that you're all going to recognize. Plot slash structure, and cinematography.
Okay.
Because the cinematography is also part of what I feel is the issue between the trailer and, you know, the clips that I saw that were used to plug the film and were not at all representative of the movie. And I think that was just a huge mistake.
Okay.
Huge mistake. But so, the basic premise of this movie is at some point in the near future, and that's very important because all the tech is familiar but kind of upgraded from
what futuristic.
Yeah. And not like super futuristic. We're not talking about Blade Runner.
Right, near future.
About, yeah, 20, you know, 10, 15 years in the future.
Right.
Where this, there is the top floors of this building, where there used to be a hotel, and it's still called a hotel, are used as a sort of covert hospital for
gangsters.
For gangsters, yeah. And other kinds of criminals. Gun runners and assassins and people like that.
Pirate's Cove, low-life sort.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And it's run by a woman who is often called the nurse. She had a name. Her name is Jean Thomas.
Right.
But
Jodie Foster.
The nurse by Jodie Foster. And what do you have to... You don't have to say anything about Jodie Foster. I mean, her name speaks for itself.
I will say that, you know, I've been finding her choice of films in the past 10 years kind of questionable. I thought her taking the part in Elysium was awesome.
Right.
But she had this weird British-y accent going on,
yeah.
Which was like broke like every 10 seconds.
Right.
So I love to see her in stuff, but I was like, oh well.
Okay, every once in a while, she stretches and breaks.
Right.
This she did not in this one.
No.
This was amazing.
No. Fantastic.
She did a great job. Okay. And anyway, so the nurse works with an orderly whose name is Everest, and his name is Everest because he's gigantic, played by Dave Bautista.
Right,
Dave Bautista. You might be more familiar to people out there. He's Drax in the
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, and he also does a fantastic job. But these two people basically wait here at this clinic, and when the gangsters come in, they give them one of the rooms, and the rooms are all named after travel destinations, like Waikiki, Honolulu, Nice, and Acapulco, and the people basically go by those names while they're there.
Right.
And that's kind of part of the point, because a lot of the actors, in you know, they're referenced as being Niagara, or being Honolulu,
right.
Or Waikiki. And so...
Yeah, I have to admit, I found that unusual in that, let's just say, in the near future, you know, quasi dystopian high crime, which is what it was painted as.
Right.
Every night, you're referring to somebody else's.
Yeah.
Waikiki or
Nice. It's someone new.
It could be somebody new.
And it's a sort of way to maintain anonymity. So you're not actually referring to the
in objectivity.
Right. Right. Right.
Your name is not Bill. It's Waikiki.
Right. Who needs to have their liver replaced? Oh, it's
double bypass on Everest, please.
Yeah.
Got it.
So, you know what this setting reminded me of?
Waikiki. Right.
What it reminded me of most is the secret Assassin's Hotel and the John, Keanu Reeves.
Oh, yeah. That reminded me of that also, in John Wick.
Yeah, John
yes.
Wick.
It reminded me of that as well.
Yeah, it was very much like, except, of course, it's a clinic. And it's not swanky at all. It's very, very...
It's not run down.
It's not run down, but
it's aged.
Yeah, and it's very pragmatic.
Yeah.
It's just there's no luxury in it. It's just
agreed.
Yeah, like the televisions in some of the rooms don't work, and
right
the travel destination paintings on the walls of the rooms have not been retouched in years, clearly, and that sort of built into it a sense of retro futurism.
It did,
because a lot of the decor inside the inside this refurbished hotel, a lot of the decor looked very like 50s.
Yes.
You know, that old style.
Well, if you're going to get into that part of it, then I'm going to get into it as well.
Absolutely.
Because
the real thing is, well, I mean, let's just briefly, the plot was what you would expect is that a bunch of different crooks end up there for various different reasons, and all of their crazy stories start swirling around each other,
right.
And everything comes unraveled.
Right.
Which, you know, that's basically once you realize what kind of movie it is.
Yes.
Which I did not know when I went in, because all the trailers made it look like a heist movie.
Right.
Let's get into it. We're going to talk about the design and the cinematography.
Yeah, if we want to talk about the way it was filmed, the color, everything. And you're right, there was an element of retrofuturism in it, and that was pretty cool. And it was made that way by the set. But I want to talk about also how it was filmed, because there's just been this thing in the past few years where there have been a kind of desaturated colors, or there's really like low depth of field.
Right.
And it's kind of designed to impart a kind of dystopian feel to it, which is okay, except that it's kind of been overdone. And what I noticed in Upgrade, and what I noticed in this movie, is this reintroduction of these really hard, really in-your-face kind of primary colors. You know, lots of deep reds and lots of
like the blue. Hotel sign too.
Right, not desaturated.
Right,
really deeply saturated. The hotel sign exactly. And I think that was not an accident, because Upgrade, like I said, was kind of like a revisited, renewed vaporwave. You know,
yeah.
Like
yeah.
Feel to it without being vaporwave. It wasn't cheesy.
Right.
So
it took itself more serious.
It did. So this was like, in terms of the cinematography, the colors I thought were fantastic.
I did too. It was very well. Like I said,
and the murals you're talking about, you mentioned they did that in Blade Runner, but they also used these sort of old photographs to interject this kind of old timey nostalgia.
Yeah.
So
things
that clearly had been
there from before.
From
this
before.
Was.
Setting was great. So I
agree. And it was a cinematographer was Chung Chung Hoon, who also did the first chapter of It.
Hmm.
So,
okay.
And I think he did a much better job on this one. There was something about the It movie, I don't want to review the It movie, but there was something about the cinematography in the It movie that just struck me as so 90s filmy that take it seriously.
It was a 90s movie that was remade.
Well, yeah. And it was, but there was something really bizarrely. Spielbergian about it that I was like, it wasn't scary to me.
It got campy.
Inadvertently so.
Right.
And I think that the cinematography in that one was part of it. But in this one, he is all in. I mean,
okay.
He just absolutely goes all in to the setting, and I really liked it. I really liked the aesthetic, and I thought that he stayed true to it. But now let me go to my little critique of the way this movie was promoted, which
okay.
ties into this. The clip that was used, and like for example, if you saw Sterling Brown on Jimmy Fallon, the clip that they used to promote this film was from the first like 5-10 minutes of the film, completely different aesthetic, completely different setting, and it was about bank robbers figuring out where the loot was going to be in the people in the bank during a riot. And it was brightly lit because it was in a bank.
Yeah.
And it was very much like a heist. And, you know, and it came on, it made the movie look like it was going to be a heist movie. Not a heist movie.
No.
Not bright. In the moment that these guys got out of the bank and things started to go wrong for them, the color changed, the movie's tone changed, everything started to get darker.
Yeah.
And you suddenly realize that you're not in a heist flick. You're in a, it's like a quasi-cozy. It felt like Murder on the Orient Express.
Right.
Or The Hateful Eight, because you have a group of people who are stuck together.
Yes.
And you just know something's going to happen.
Well, the whole texture of the movie changed.
Yeah, the whole texture of the movie changed. And
yeah.
So I can imagine people seeing that, like the trailers, and seeing, especially if that part, they saw that part, that clip that was shown from the first, you know, 5-10 minutes of the movie. They would go to the movie, and 15-20 minutes in it, I could see them going, to heck, this is, I didn't come here.
Right.
So walking out. I didn't do that because I have this thing to do. I had to stay through the whole thing.
So your theory partially is that the film was marketed improperly.
I think,
I agree.
I think the film was marketed improperly, and when you do that, people have a right to be angry about the final product,
yes.
Even if it's good.
Right.
Because, you know,
I ordered a blender, but I got a Cuisinart.
Right, right.
And it's like, well, it's a really awesome Cuisinart, but it's still not a blender.
It's not a blender.
Right.
And I always think of this thing where, if you get up in the middle of the night and you're kind of sleepy and you want to go get a glass of milk, but you're so sleepy, I accidentally pour cola And that moment when you think you're going to drink milk, but you drink cola instead, yes. It tastes like the most weird thing in the world. And that's what it is. If you go to a movie thinking it's going to be a heist movie, and suddenly you're in this, almost like a stage play.
Yes.
It was almost like a stage play.
Well, it was, you know, what was it? Well, it was like fourth wall break, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And so.
But it was like fourth wall break. Well, it was like, anyway, yes.
Yeah, but you get the idea. Anyone who's seen Hateful Eight or knows the Murder on the Orient Express.
Or anything by David Mamet or.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, you see this, I see this where 57% of the, 33% of the people who watched it liked it. So 2/3 of them didn't. And I'm like, I bet they would have liked it if it had been marketed.
Well, that number would have been higher.
If they didn't feel cheated.
Yes. That's probably true. But let's get into the nuts and bolts.
Okay.
Okay, because we've already talked about the set, which we like. We all agreed that the cinematography was on point. Let's talk about the writing.
Okay.
You know what? Let's talk about the acting first. The acting side.
Let's get the acting because I don't have anything bad to say about the acting.
And yeah, admittedly, everybody did their jobs.
Right, and they were who they were.
Yes,
except for Jodie Foster, which that's not the kind of thing she does because she takes on a character, and she had this character. I couldn't quite place her accent. I know someone out there is going to say if they said it, I'd be like, oh yeah. And they say, oh, that's an Iowa accent.
Jodie, you've been living in Europe too long.
But she did. I thought she did a very convincing job,
and she brought a depth to it.
Right.
That probably would have been absent otherwise.
That was shaky and emotional.
There was an emotional, not emotional, but physical. Because, you know, she would sort of hop, yeah. You know, she
oh,
was,
and the more, anxious, sort of the more anxious she got, the more she went, the more that was accentuated.
Yes.
You could tell that it was something that when she got anxious, she walked, she was more, she had more difficulty doing everything.
Yes.
And, yeah, she did a great job. It was it's actually one of the best character, presentations I think I've ever seen. I mean, everything about the character was so memorable that if you know, Jodie Foster were doing an interview,
well, she's part of that character. Like, oh, that probably would have been.
That's from Hotel Artemis. That's
yes.
That's the nurse. She did a fantastic job. Sterling Brown, who I think the people mostly are going to know him from Black Panther, where he played Killmonger's dad for about 5 minutes.
And then got killed, right.
And, but he played his real name was Sherman, but he was Waikiki. And his brother was in there. His brother was Brian Tyree Henry, who was Honolulu, who they were there because Honolulu got shot during the bank robbery. And the only thing I could find on him was that he was in Atlanta. And I don't watch that series, so I don't know anything about Brian Henry.
I don't know much about him either.
He did a really good job in this, playing he's the screw up brother, whereas Sterling Brown played the keeping it together and knows what he's doing brother.
Right.
And actual brothers, just to clarify, I mean they're brothers.
Right.
Brothers. I didn't want people to think I was being flippant, and you're just sitting there going, I'm going to get away with that.
you were being far too colloquial.
I didn't know exactly. Yeah, I know. But no, so and so they, you know. Basically, you can tell the scenario is that the together brother is trying to take care of his other brother who's always screwing up and messing things up. And, of course, in this particular bank robbery, he screws something up and he gets shot.
Yeah.
Well, actually, one of the other guys.
So we covered Jodie. We covered talking about Sterling K. Brown.
Right.
The brother, he's in a hospital bed most of it, so.
But the thing I really liked about him is that when it comes to the point at the end where you know that he's like, I'm not going to make it.
Right.
He had he manages to pull off some moments where his embarrassment and regret really come through.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was just looking at that guy going, man, that guy is ashamed of himself. And I thought he did.
I was ready to just roll the gurney out the window. I was like, dude, you're like.
Yeah, but that's you. That's you.
Well.
That's you. That's why it's a good thing you don't have a little brother who screws up all the time. Yeah. Or was he the older brother? I can't remember.
Yeah. Okay, so.
Yep, those are good.
So Sterling K. Brown's, his performance was solid. I mean, everybody's performance was solid.
Yeah.
This is my, honestly, I don't really have anything bad to say about the performances.
Okay.
So we can...
Not Sophie Boutella?
You know, Sophie Boutella, this is my problem with her generally. Is Sophie Boutella is, she plays, she's becoming stereotyped. As the badass with, you know...
I mean, yeah. I
just want to see more range out of her. Like, I want to see forget these roles that have more depth.
And
more
if anyone doesn't know what John's talking about, let me go through her roles. She played the mummy in The Mummy. Okay, badass female.
Yes.
She was in Atomic Blonde. That's the whole reason that movie was written.
Yeah.
She was a bad guy assassin in Kingsman. Was it Golden Crown?
Yeah.
Whatever the second one was.
Yeah, she had the blades for legs.
Yeah, blades for legs. And she was in Fahrenheit 451, where she
was a rebel.
Was a rebel.
And she wasn't a badass.
She, was, no, there she wasn't even interesting in that.
She wasn't even interesting. No. So,
which is terrible, because she's one of those people who, even when she's doing poorly in a role because she's poorly directed or poorly used and poorly cast.
That's the word I'm looking for. Underutilized.
There's potential there. It's like you can tell she's trying to do.
Yes.
Like she's boxed into some bad role. And she's really trying hard.
Yep.
But she just can't because the role's not big enough for her.
Right.
And this particular movie, weirdly enough, because she has, I don't know, don't want to spoil it, but her role in this movie is very much a blunt instrument.
Yes.
In the end.
Well, the impression that I got, and we can actually talk about the superfluous element of the actor stall, which was the gentleman from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yes, Charlie Day.
Charlie Day, which, I mean, I like him okay as an actor.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that he tends to pick these roles that are obnoxious
right.
By their nature. And he is really obnoxious.
Yeah, and I told you, knowing him from Horrible Bosses and from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia,
yeah.
If someone had said he's in a movie like this, I would be like, well, there's only one person he can be is the DP.
Yes.
He's going to be
the
guy.
The D-bag.
Yeah, the big D-bag.
So his character was, I feel like, just chewing up time. And let me, for the record, let me talk about this for a second. This movie was an hour and 35 minutes long.
Yep.
There was a time when you couldn't go to the movies for less than 2 hours.
Right.
And so what I'm seeing right now is the biggest complaint with most of these movies is they're underdeveloped.
Yeah.
And you have these other movies, and you know I have to bash this, you know, like movies like Star Wars.
Right.
They're front-loaded, you know, and they're just wasting time for most of the movie.
Yeah.
In these movies, you only have 2 hours. You don't get the 2 hour and 35 minute marker. So why not use the extra 10 minutes, the extra 20 minutes to develop the plot, develop the characters? The thing that bugged me about this was this guy chewed up probably 10 minutes in the movie.
Right.
For no reason. And his only goal, his only purpose seemed to be to establish that the other people in the hotel were badass.
That was to me what seemed like, is like, because they were all on a certain level and he wasn't. And when everyone's on a certain level, it's like, well, how do we let people know what level that is? You have to have somebody come in so that the assassin can break a coffee cup and fling a shard into the chair,
right? Yeah.
And demonstrate how much of a badass that she is,
right?
Which plays into it later. But there are better ways to do that,
right?
There are better ways to do that. And I just thought his character could have developed into something better.
Why not surprise us?
Right?
Why not get to the point where there's going to be some action? And it's like, oh wow, I didn't really. I kind of suspected that person was a badass, but they're a badass.
Not like this. Not like
not like this, right?
Yeah.
So
now, but I do have to say. That particular character, like you said, this movie. Let's say that they gave us this movie and they said, okay, you can stretch it to 2 hours. One of the things I would have done is make his character at least somewhat sympathetic. Something about him that made you go, okay, I don't want him to die at the end. He's still a jerk,
right?
But make him a little bit more three dimensional than just basically taking this character from Always Sunny in Philadelphia and just making him a gun runner.
Who just talks.
It's essentially essententially what the character is.
It
was fun sometimes to watch, because I like to watch him squirm. But it was, at the same time, I agree with you, he was not well used, that character.
Yeah, I was like watching him going, we're losing daylight here.
There was no daylight in that part of the movie.
No, there wasn't, but you know what I mean, like the clock is ticking.
Yeah, we're losing moonlight.
My life is ending as you talk.
Yeah. The city's blowing up, there are helicopters falling out of the sky.
Yes. And I sort of feel like if you're a weapons dealer, you're not talking so much. You just
right.
Like, you know who I am, and I have money, and hey, honey, why don't you come with me? And I was like, okay.
He came off like somebody who works for a gun dealer.
Right.
A weapons
dealer. Who works for a gun dealer, only suspects his boss is actually a gun dealer.
Right, yeah.
He's like, oh, my boss might be a gun dealer. Let me steal his credit card and his IDs, it's going to be him. Okay, so.
Jeff Goldblum.
So,
Jeff Goldblum played Jeff Goldblum. As he always does. I mean, he had another name. He was a big crime boss called the Wolf King.
Yes.
If
you're just now joining, we're reviewing
Hotel Artemis, directed by Drew Pierce.
Yes. And feel free to wave, say hi, troll us, whatever. We'll respond.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe if we
tell us how much you hate what we're doing. I mean, in the comments.
Self-loathing is at the center of this game.
Make us see if you can make us cry.
Yeah, I might.
Oh, that would be funny.
Yeah, I'm a better actor than some of these. Anyway, so.
Oh, now come on.
Wow, okay.
Come on, you're going to say that with Jodie Foster in the movie?
No, it's well. I mean, Jeff Goldblum.
Jeff Goldblum. We were talking about this earlier, and I was saying that Jeff Goldblum, who plays like he is the crime boss who actually owns Hotel Artemis, and you see Bloody Mary behind you or something?
No, like just, there's like these little fireflies in the feed.
Oh,
you see that?
Oh yeah, I do see that.
I don't know what that is. It's so odd.
Now we're being invaded by alien.
Maybe it's dust particles. I don't know. Okay.
Okay.
Nothing we can do about that.
So Jeff Goldblum. Who's playing this crime boss who actually owns a Hotel Artemis.
Yeah.
We were talking earlier and we said, well, he does Jeff Goldblum, which is what he does, whether he's a good guy or a bad guy. It's always Jeff Goldblum. But we don't care.
Also, a Portlandia alone, by the way.
Right.
You got to watch it. Yeah. You got to watch that set. Okay, but continue.
But yeah, in Jeff Goldblum's case, you don't care. That's why you watch a movie with Jeff Goldblum in it, because he's just... The other day I was watching, he has a video about where they're showing him for the first time photographs of people's tattoos of him. And, about 5 minutes in, I'm like, why is this so fascinating to watch?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's because it's Jeff Goldblum. Yeah. He just has this personality. You just like to watch him.
Part of it, his reactions are like the gift wrap surprise. He always has something original to say about something. It's always something odd. So he's in that. Zachary Quinto's in it. Zachary Quinto. I mean, he does a good job. He always does a good job, but
right. He doesn't.
There are a lot of really weird nonsense things that happen in this show, in this movie.
But if you don't know Zachary, he's the one who played the rebooted Spock.
Yes, he's Spock.
Yeah.
So we've gone to the cast. We've talked about the set.
Right.
We talked about the. Are we going to talk about the writing? I mean, is there more?
Well, the writing, as we were saying earlier, the writing as far as dialogue level was sometimes. Needed a scrub. The dialogue needed a scrub.
I would say an overhaul, but okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And in some places, it was just very, very... There was one particular word, which one of the characters, actually a couple of the characters, kept repeating.
Are you going to bleep it out?
As
if I say it, will you bleep it out?
I will bleep it out in the YouTube final, but people on the stream are going to hear it.
Fuck.
Yeah.
So here's the thing about the word. Because I did not...
I want to turn the volume way up on that part.
You can, because I've already marked this as not child friendly. But here's the thing. If you have children in the room, I'm sorry. But it's not even just like the usage of the word, because every movie uses that word.
Right.
It's like the way...
It's the way they use... They were trying to make it into like...
A dramatic...
Like a catch
non sequitur.
Like every time something happened, one of the characters would go...
Yeah, it was so...
And I'm like, you can't take a word that's centuries old and make a catchphrase out of it. Everybody knows this word. You're not telling us it. And it just came off as a really clumsy attempt to manipulate the audience.
Yeah, they were going for levity and brevity.
Right.
And it was like, you guys didn't quite
there was nothing left. There's nothing about it that's... It's not... Because there's nothing funny about that word. It can be used in a funny way.
Yeah.
But just saying it isn't funny unless it's one time in the movie from someone who either never spoke in the movie or never spoke or never cursed in the movie.
Right.
You know, if the nun, looks up at something and she's either on a vow of silence or she's been prim and proper all the time, and then she goes, then it's funny.
Right.
But not when gangsters
the old lady
say it over and over again.
So like, the thing that bugged me about this too is because the writing, we're always harping on this. The writing sets the pace.
We just broke the blue barrier. You realize, right? Our podcast is just
what now
shattered through the blue barrier, and it's now it's in blue territory.
Wait, what is blue territory?
Curse words and stuff. Like
that. Oh, I mean, but we're not like Joe Rogan blue.
Well, no, we're not quite.
We'll talk about that later.
I mean, we could be.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
So
if we videoed our coffee meetings before.
So the thing that I want to talk about too is like the pace. The pacing of the movies is set by the writing.
Right.
And one of the things that I feel like the movie was truncated because it went from we're all going to die and we're in trouble to, hey, let me sacrifice myself so you guys can get out of here.
Right.
And I feel like that really destroys, because this was a cyberpunk movie, but it really destroys this. It went from cynical to and jaded to altruistic and self-sacrificing, like really in a matter of like 30 seconds.
Right. It was bizarre how, I mean, they, to their credit, they tried to set it up, but it still came off as we're switching genres the moment this thing happens that makes everything change.
And some people tell them, I feel bad about killing your boss, and so now let me help you escape. Like,
right.
What?
No, which is now just the second time this happened, because, like I said, the first 15 minutes, it felt like a heist movie,
right?
And then it felt like a different kind of movie, and then it felt like a different kind of movie again.
Right.
And it's like,
and you use Charlie Day setting up all taking all this time to set up how dastardly, evil Pirates Covey,
right,
cynical, jaded, all the other characters are, and then even to the point where he basically, you know what I mean? And then all of a sudden, it's like, wait, you know what? Never mind, I'm going to help people.
So yeah, everybody becomes friends. Almost everybody becomes friends. They all start trying to do all these sentimental. But, like you said, if the movie weren't truncated and they'd spent some more time in the middle developing these characters and their relationships, that would have made, that could have
yes.
been done. It could
yes.
have been done, but it wasn't.
Yes. Like, if somehow Sophia, like, if all their stories are going to converge, then all of their stories
all
should
their,
converge.
Yeah.
So each person's story in total
right.
should converge with the larger
right.
story. And I never got a sense of who Sophie Boutella was.
No,
so
just that she knew Sherman.
And that
they
she
had
killed
a past
somebody
somehow.
With a coffee mug.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. They had a past.
And she
somehow.
Was an assassin who killed people while recording it with an implant. I mean, that's a good cyberpunk, a good usage
very,
of
yeah.
cybernetics, cyberpunk technology.
Right.
Oh, I film it so that my clients can masturbate while they watch me kill their, you know, the person.
Yeah,
that's genius.
Yeah.
Genius, pulp, cyberpunk, noir, totally misused.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Or underused.
Underused.
It was properly used, but not there wasn't enough.
Right.
Propping it up.
Agreed.
I have to say though, I still like the movie, but of course I have an appreciation for movies that are set up like plays, and this one was, and I think that. With a little tweaking, this could actually be put on stage.
I will say, so directed by Drew Pierce.
Yes.
And was co-written or written?
I think it was also written by him. He's because he's mainly a writer. He's written and co-written a lot of stuff. I know you're gonna trash this. Iron Man 3, Mission Impossible.
The funny thing is that I had the word Shane Black on my tongue, even though I wasn't even gonna mention Iron Man.
Right.
Look, you know, I give him a pass on Iron Man 3. Like I said, you can't follow that Shane Black
right.
nonsense and,
right.
and not get shit on a little bit.
Right.
But I will say, Drew Pierce, baby, you're not going to be a favorite of mine until you clean up. I mean, you know what I mean? I'm not going to go see a movie just because Drew Pierce wrote, you know.
No, I wouldn't either. But I think that as far as his directorial debut, this was, I think, he passed the class as far as I know.
The guy who directed Upgrade, I'm a fan.
Right.
I forget who directed that movie, but I'm a fan of his now. I'll go see that. This, if Drew Pierce does one more thing and it ends up being good, I'll go. I might become a fan of this.
Right.
But right now,
I'll definitely watch what he does next because of this movie.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
So what would you say, like star rating wise?
Acting, I'm gonna give it 4 stars acting because I think that it could have been better with better dialogue. But there's no way to know.
More Dave Bautista. I mean,
yeah,
I'm into
Dave
Bautista
really did
you know,
a good job.
He does a good job in movies.
He's
solid.
Really good at doing this sort of stoic,
yes,
guy, and yet not coming off as like a stone.
Yes,
not being boring. He's stoic without, but there's still something going on.
And he's one of these dudes who doesn't have to talk a lot to convey.
Right.
He's a good physical actor.
Right.
And one movie that you should check out if you really want to get a sense of this is not the Blade Runner 2049 main film. He's in a short that they made in the run-up to the actual release of the movie. Go see that, because that really shows you. It really does a disservice in the movie itself.
Right.
So go see that, the short, the 2049 right. shorts. He does an amazing job in that. So,
now, I mean, we were talking, we like him in Avengers.
Yeah.
I mean, not Avengers, but Guardians of the
Galaxy. So 4 stars. I'll agree with you. All the actors will, you know, did a good job.
Right.
I will say again, just like Sophia Boutella, though, I'll say Sterling K. Brown was underutilized.
Yeah, he was underutilized. Yeah, he could have. There could be more to that.
Like he just had this wide-eyed look on his face for most of the movie. I just felt
right.
like, oh, he's a nice guy. Like
yeah.
I want something like harder, grittier, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay.
To fit in with the cyber aspect of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
The next is plot structure. Now that if that were including dialogue, I would chop it down. But I think I like how all the plots. wove together. And particularly, I liked the fact that the two main characters, which were Jodie Foster's character and Sterling Brown's character, had the exact same theme to their character journey, but in very different ways. And the theme being, it's easier to get in than it is to get out.
Yes.
And they both had to face up to this at the end of the film. And I was really impressed by that, because usually what happens is they throw a theme down and one character or all the characters, anyone who's participating in it, is participating in it and with the same meaning.
Yes.
Here, but I feel like they managed to put two meanings and have two very different characters.
So what are you giving it?
Plot structure, I'm giving it 4.5 stars.
4.5? I'm giving it 2.5.
Yeah, okay, we can
see. I'm saying it not because you're right. I'm giving it 2.5 as opposed to 2 or 1 because it was solid. The plot structure was solid. Act 1, act 2, right. Act 3. My problem with it was, and you're right, they did tie things together. They didn't tie them together enough. They didn't give them. It makes me curious what they left on the cutting room floor. So
interesting. Maybe they'll come out with a director's cut.
I would. Yeah, maybe
him being a new director, there may be. There may also be, the studio might have been able to push him around and say, nah, cut this down to 94 minutes.
That's entirely possible.
We don't know. I mean,
but the thing is that those are 2.5 stars that I'm hanging around the neck of the studio.
Okay.
And I'm going to say, if the characters had developed a bit more, if they had made the characters more complete and then tied them into the master story, the theme thing was good. I'm still running with 2.5 stars.
Yeah. My main complaint about the plot structure, which I would be why I wouldn't give it a 5. It's, like I said, it went from one genre to another genre. You know, the first sequence was one genre, and then the next series of sequences was another genre. Then when you got into Act 3, you were in a completely different genre.
Yes.
They didn't do a really good job of putting those together.
Well, the difference between an Oscar award winning movie and a piece of crap is 1 star. But
yeah,
the difference between 1 star and 1 star is 1 star.
Yeah.
That was complete nonsense, but whatever. So,
we can disagree on that.
Yeah.
What was the last cinematography?
I'm giving it 4 stars.
Okay, that's what I was.
I won't give it 5 because it wasn't quite there. Granted, I think that what they're doing right now with this reversing this low depth of field thing, shallow depth of field,
right.
I think it's experimental, but it's working. Keep doing it.
Oh yeah, I like that too.
So.
What you were going to say, one of the reasons I wouldn't give it more than 4 stars is because the cinematography contributed to the genre garbage that was happening in the structure.
Yes.
And I you know, if you're an accomplice to a crime, then you're also a criminal.
So Valerie Brooks just commented and said it would be great if we could incorporate movie clips in order to explain our point of view. You're right, Valerie. We're working on doing the live integration of movie clips. So what we do for right now, is we incorporate those in post for the actual release.
When we
release these films, these videos,
we'll try to put something in.
Yeah, we always we put clips and stuff in there. So, but thanks for the input. You're actually correct. Okay, so that's Hotel Artemis. So 4 stars. Well, for me, 4 stars. 2.5 stars.
Acting 4.4. Plot structure 4.5, 2.5, and cinematography 4.4.
Yes.
So I would give it an overall.
I'm going to give it a overall 3.
Okay.
So I would say go, you know, when it comes out on Blu-ray, see it. Maybe you see it. Make up your own mind.
But see it knowing what we've said that it is. Don't go into it thinking you're going to watch a heist movie. It's
right.
Not bad at all.
And don't go in there thinking that you're going to watch, you know, like the greatest movie ever either. It's a good movie.
It's
an okay movie. All that matters is what I think. Okay.
Right.
So what else do we have for this?
I don't know. We have a lot of stuff for the next hour.
What is... so we only have like a few minutes left anyway.
Right. We have about 10 minutes left.
So should I announce my...
Absolutely.
My big news?
Yeah. Announce your big news.
So, after a really long time... a couple of years ago... Well, several years ago, I wrote a story called Hemocrash. And I released it in a serialized version on the Fresh Pulp website. In half chapter sequences every week. And I discontinued it about 2 years ago. But more recently, I was looking at it and realized that I had amassed a massive, like 80,000 words, essentially, just shy of a long novel. So I decided to release it. And that will be coming out in roughly 2 weeks. And I have...
You have a...
I have a cover.
The cover graphic.
Yeah, I have the controversy. It's already generating controversy, man.
Really?
No, not really.
I liked it. What did people... What were people...
So here's the cover. Oh, wow, that's really like huge.
This book comes in 1-ton and 2-ton printings.
Yes, and we have oversized for the visually impaired. And we have...
There you go.
Like, yeah, it was really big. I didn't really account for that. So here's the cover.
And that's nice. I like the cover. I don't know what people don't like.
Well, the cover, everybody loves the art. But literally, aside from like three people, everybody hates the lettering. And I think part of it too, I realize, is that nobody really understands what I'm going for. Like, look at the, you know, how can you not like that lettering? Anyway,
The thing is, it captures, you know, if you're going to have something that's cyberpunk, you're going to want something that's squarish. But if you're going to have something that's like horror, it has to be off somehow, and that's both squarish and off. It just, to me, it captures the blend of genres in the story.
That's exactly. So, you know,
the people criticizing it don't understand the story, or they don't know
it. Or haven't read it. So this is going to be, so basically the way that it's structured is, I'm going to be releasing the first book in three block increments. So it's going to be basically a novella okay. length. I'm going to release the first one in a couple of weeks, and then if that all goes well, I'm going to release all three. If the first three go well, then you'll get the second, third books. So,
good deal.
That's my big news. I hope you like the story. It'll be out. I mean, the cover is controversial, but hopefully the writing will be a little less controversial.
Well, no. I hope that the writing is super controversial.
Well, I
hope that people go on Twitter to denounce you and try to get you fired from your job, which is apparently what Twitter's for. It's just to get people fired.
Yes. Well, here's the other interesting thing, by the way. So everybody thinks the cover art is like a self-portrait. I've heard that like 4 times now. So the artist who I hired...
Anything like you.
No, it doesn't. That dude is buff and has a mohawk, which I would like straight up die. I would kill somebody to be like buff and have a mohawk and like also have a sword and a plasma pistol.
You could have a mohawk.
I could have an inverted mohawk. So anyway, so the thing is that the artist who did this actually...
Didn't know what you look
doesn't
like.
Know what I look like.
So how could it possibly be?
Right. He had no idea what I looked like. Well, to this day, he doesn't know what I look like. Unless he like cyberstalked me and was like, hey, you know what? Let me. Anyway.
People don't think that, you know.
It'll be released in electronic format and physical format. And I will probably set up something where people can actually buy a physical copy, mail it to me, and then I'll sign it for them or whatever.
I think that's a cool deal.
So, yeah.
Or they could pay you to fly in and pay for a hotel room and you could sign it.
Yeah, or I could cosplay myself as myself.
Yeah,
I could cosplay.
You've got that suit in your closet, right? Because that's you.
I got the one suit, right?
And
I had that one suit.
There'll
be like a mix and match, like flip booklet, where you can be like, oh, I want like the mohawk or the inverted mohawk, the gray suit or the black suit.
Where you slide the thing back and forth.
Yeah, exactly. So be on the lookout for that. There will be announcements. Also, if you want, you can go to my author page, J. Austin Yoshino, Facebook page, and you know there'll be updates on there too.
Yep, awesome. That's fantastic.
Great. So I support the cause. Now we are going to tune out and we're going to take a break for a few minutes. But before we go,
briefly,
we love doing these podcasts.
We do.
We love your support. So support us. Tell us what you want. Tell us what kind of things you want to know about. What kind of things you want to see us talk about. But also, go to the Patreon page, Fresh Pulp Magazine Patreon page. Go to the Buy Me a Coffee, Fresh Pulp Buy Me a Coffee page. The links are on the fan page, Fresh Pulp fan page.
That's actually very relevant.
Very relevant.
Drink coffee before every single?
Absolutely. Most importantly, like, share, comment. Those things, in terms of your support, those things mean more to us than everything else combined. We won't say no to the money, though.
Right. But let your friends and family know. Let your... all of the people that you're in contact with in social media know so that we can have more fun.
Yeah. And plus, log into the live stream, troll us, insult us, talk to us, whatever. We're down with it. So, in any case, thank you very much for tuning in. We will be back in 10 minutes for episode 10 of the...
We're up to the...
We're on a roll.
To the double digits now.
I know.
All right. Goodbye, everyone.